if you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. How are you? Welcome to 2A Radio. Thank you, RJ Hinder. Yet again, another fine show. All right, guys, bunch of stuff going on. I got to tell you, yesterday was a really busy day. Really busy. I got up at about 6. I finally got to bed around midnight. That was 18 hours, not 6 hours, just for clarification there. Got up, came in, did the show, went over to Dave Champion's house. He has an extra vehicle. He's got a big full-size 4x8 bed, big old diesel Dodge pickup. I went and I borrowed that, and I hooked up the trailer, and I drove to Vegas, and I did a bunch of errands, and then went over to my daughter's apartment. They're all vacating. She has a bunch of roommates. They're all vacating the apartment as of May 1st. She'll be going on a trip for a couple months during the summertime. A couple other people have some other things going on. So I went there and picked up all of her stuff and moved it back home last night. Back to my house, which is, it's great to have my daughter. It's funny, when she left with a laptop, a suitcase, and a gym bag, and she came back with a full-size pickup truck bed and a little trailer, and the trailer's like a little mini truck bed that's, you know, been converted to a trailer with a shell on it, full. And it's only been like 10 months, so it's amazing the stuff you can collect. Anyhow, it's another thing that's kind of difficult for me. I've always had a whole bunch of stuff in my garage. You know, it's just my garage has been a storage garage. It always seems to get that way, and I can't stand it. So finally, about a month ago, I spent a day, and I went through everything in my garage, and I loaded up. I borrowed another buddy of mine's truck, a full-size truck. I took 3 pickup truck loads of stuff in my garage to the dump. I just plain got sick and tired of having it. If I didn't need it, I didn't use it, it had no real value. It all went to the dump. So then I had enough room to park one of my 2 cars in the garage, and if I was able to get a few more shelves up, some things hanging from the ceiling, I could get both cars in there. Then a few days later, I go in the backyard, and I get all the crap out of the backyard, and everything that belongs in the dump, I stage in the garage. Well, I didn't get to dumping it in the garage, so I took a trailer load finally this weekend so I could put a car in the garage again. Now, my daughter's back, and all of her crap's going to go in the garage. I cannot win for losing. And, folks, this summer, when she's going to be gone, is going to be when all of her stuff is supposed to be residing in said garage, which is exactly when I want to have my cars in there because it's 110 degrees every day, and inside the car, it becomes blooming hot. And my Durango, it's a nicer Durango. It's an 03 Durango RT. So with the Durango RT, you get all the leather seats. And in 110 degrees outside, inside the car, now we're talking about 150, 160 degrees, and it becomes miserably hot. I love to wear shorts and a t-shirt. And if you sit down on leather seats where it's that hot inside of the car, you just singe your legs, and they're stuck for a while. It's a bad deal. So anyhow, had to deal with all that stuff yesterday. And then starting to prep for all of the things that I need to take with me to California this weekend for the Nightingale shoot. Anyhow, we'll cover some of that stuff when we get back. We have a caller on the line we'll take after the break. That's Mike in Ohio. So everybody just hold on. We'll be back in a few. This is your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443. Welcome back from the break, everyone. So we have calling in from Ohio. We have Mike on the line. Mike, welcome to 2A Radio.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. What's happening?
I was wondering, this is the first time I've heard your show, and you said that the Second Amendment is inalienable.
I didn't say it was inalienable. I've only repeated the way it was outlined, but yeah.
Right, yeah. Well, what is the meaning of that?
Inalienable, that means it cannot be, you cannot be alienated from it. That means it cannot be separated from you. It is a God-given birthright. Now, that's the way it was originally lined out. Of course, this is the way things work. The legislative branch will pass laws, the executive branch will enforce laws, and the judicial branch will interpret laws, including the Constitution. So what's happened is some things started to go a little awry, and the legislative branch would pass things like, all right, well, you know, in these cases, you could lose your Second Amendment rights. Like if you're convicted of a felony, let's just use that for example. The executive branch would actually enforce that, and the judicial branch has said, well, yeah, in these cases, that is a reasonable bit of restriction because someone went out of their way to commit a felony, and they should realize that's something that they could lose. It's like if you put your hand in the cookie jar before dinner, you got to know mom's going to smack it if she catches you, sort of thing. With that exception, I mean, you really have to screw up your own rights. But with that exception, then it is considered inalienable. You cannot be alienated from those rights.
But it was originally written that they were to be inalienable.
Correct.
So I don't understand how our legislators can just, it seems to me, if they add these little caveats so that they can go around the back door to take people's rights.
Well, you're absolutely right, Mike. And what's happened is you end up going to court and having the judges, the judicial branch, actually interpret those laws. And oftentimes those things get upheld when we would look at them unconstitutional, so you go to the next court, until eventually it would end up at the Supreme Court if they decide to hear it, which is the case right now with the whole McDonald versus Chicago case when it comes to gun rights. I mean, Heller should have been clear enough, but now they want to incorporate the Second Amendment. So the Supreme Court is looking, and I quite honestly expect very favorable pro-gun adjudication out of the court, a very pro-gun ruling, so that they can tell draconian type of states and cities that you cannot eliminate guns from people's lives.
Oh, I wish that I shared your optimism, Bill.
Well, you know
I'm worried about it.
I'll tell you where I get the optimism from, Mike, is that when the oral arguments began, when they were going on, and I think it was in February, most of the judges that were speaking, well over half of them that were speaking, were using very pro-gun attitude and flavors. As a matter of fact, Scalia said, look, it says in the Second Amendment, right there, shall not be infringed, and we reaffirmed it already in Heller. So they were in a way kind of tongue-lashing the city of Chicago, their attorneys, for even allowing this court case to come forth rather than dealing with it from the Heller ruling. So I have some very good, essentially it is the same damned case as Heller, really, is what it is. And I couldn't possibly see the Supreme Court saying, look, we've incorporated all these other portions of the Bill of Rights, but not the Second Amendment. That one we're going to leave different. They can't really do that. They really don't have very much of an option to rule other than in favor of McDonald and against the anti-gun side in on the side of Chicago. It would be very, very difficult for the court to ever do that and then even keep an ounce of credibility regardless of how their ruling is, because what they do is deny one of the 10 Bill of Rights to everybody across the country, and they can't very well do that.
I see. All right, well, thanks for clearing that up for me.
Mike, you're very welcome. That was a great question. I appreciate you calling in. Have a great rest of the day.
You too.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right, guys, so I spent a good portion of last night, after I got home and we had dinner, I spent a good portion of last night getting a bunch of stuff ready for the Nightingale shoot this weekend in California, which, by the way, I've gotten a couple of emails from people that said, hey, is it too late to sign up? Can we come in? So, no, I've taken their name, and I said, okay, we'll expect you. Show on up. Just pay your $200 when you get there. Everything will be cool. So we're still able to do that. If you're able to show up Saturday morning, we still got a couple of spots where we can do that. One of the things I did in Vegas was the targets that I use are 2 foot by 3 foot, but there's a lot of white space around it. And the target backers, the actual target area on the frames that they have at Burrow Canyon Shooting Park, are a little smaller, about 22 by 24. So I had to take the stuff into the old print shop I used to work at and have them cut it down a little bit just so we can get rid of all the extra white space on the targets, and bam, they're ready to go. So basically made up a range box, put in all the different stuff we're going to need, the staplers, the glue, the duct tape, the masking tape for the holes, all of the stuff that we're going to need, and put together a range box, range markers, marking paint, all this stuff. Because my daughter, by the way, that I picked up yesterday, she will be spending her 20th birthday is Saturday. She'll be spending that with her dad at this Nightingale shoot helping out. Great kid, and it's going to be fun hanging out with her. I doubt she'll be spending her 21st birthday doing anything at all even remotely similar to that. But 20th birthday, she'll be with her dad doing that. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We always enjoy hanging out and having a good time. So my oldest, just my first, so just love her to death. So anyhow, I'm getting all of this stuff together, and then it's interesting. It's like if you're packing for a big trip, you got a big business trip, or you're going on this vacation where you have a whole lot of different activities you're going to plan on. The more stuff you start to get ready, the more stuff you realize I need to add to the list. So for a while there, for every one thing I would do, two more things would add up on the list, and I was literally, the more I did, the more I got behind. So I finally got caught up. There's still several things on the list to get done today, but I think all of the actual equipment, the actual pieces in pieces of utility that I need are handled. Ed Winchester, again, I announced this yesterday, he will be there. He was supposed to be there Saturday and Sunday. As a matter of fact, he's supposed to get there tonight or tomorrow night. However, one of the guys that works with Ed in his crew, and you know what Ed does if you saw the Dirty Jobs episode that was put out, a year ago, January, I think it was, where Ed closes mines. He reclaims, and not really reclaims, but closes down mines. And they either use a foam product or they build bat gates if there's a bat habitat in there. They have several options. They'll, bring in a contractor and use some dynamite and BSU, blow stuff up. Whatever it needs to happen. Usually it's bat gates or foaming. Anyhow, one of the guys that works for Ed was on his way into the Air Force Academy. Actually, it was Air Force OCS. He was going to go in as an officer. And he died tragically in a personal car accident late Sunday night, early Monday morning. Great kid by the name of Sam. His funeral is being held probably about 100 miles or so, 110, whatever, 120 miles away from the range. On Saturday. So, of course, Ed's going to be there. He sent me an email or a text message, hey, man, a couple days ago, hey, man, this is going on Saturday, blah, blah, blah. So, obviously, it's like, dude, you know you have to do that. So I appreciate you letting me know you won't be there on Saturday. But he will be driving out, I believe, Saturday night. So Ed will be there on Sunday. So those of you who listen to the show and will be there participating, you're going to meet the great Monkey Man himself, Ed Winchester, as well as, I believe he is bringing his lovely wife with him for day two, as well as his one of his employees, Danny. Great kid. Danny's like 23 or something, and he's got his head on his shoulders like anybody I've ever met who's 10 years his senior. Just a great kid, really a good guy. So anyhow, they have both shot before. Ed's wife and his employee, Danny, his buddy Dan. So they're both tuned up. They're going to come and participate and join in on day two, which will be nice. But you get to meet the Monkey Man himself and understand why we always refer to him as the Monkey Man. Ed was an extra in the Mark Wahlberg remake of Planet of the Apes, about a decade or so ago. And as an extra, Ed was one of the chimps. So he actually went to chimp school. For a few days, they taught you how to walk and, you know, do the lips and everything. It's absolutely hilarious to see him do it. I will definitely, as Ed probably already knows, without even thinking about it, put him on the spot to entertain the crowd for a few steps. And you'll understand why we call him the Monkey Man. Anyhow, it's going to be a great class. I put together the course curriculum weeks ago, probably 2 or 3 months ago. I put together a schedule. When the folks show up, they're going to be given information on the schedule, what's going to be going on. It's going to be one heck of an event. As a matter of fact, it's one of the main volunteers from the Shalene Nightingale campaign. There's two main volunteers, campaign manager and then the main volunteer who's actually helping out, in the name of Kate, who's doing this. And then John is the name of the guy, the young guy who is the campaign manager. And both of them send me emails, finally call me on the phone, you know, things like this, worried about everything. I'm like, look, your guy's job was to bring everybody to the course. Once they get there, you can sit back and relax because we got this. This is something we have done hundreds of times, literally hundreds of classes. So just sit back, relax, don't worry about a thing. It's all good. As a matter of fact, here's a couple of things to make it easier on you. So we're all ready. We're good to go. We're really looking forward to this class because it's being held in the People's Republic of California, and they are number one on the Brady campaign. So we're really looking forward to doing this. Stay tuned, guys. There's plenty more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
I've been roaming around, always looking down at all I see.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us right now. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
All right, guys, welcome back. Just wanted to let you know about a couple of other things going on with me. I have been dealing with, for the past better part of a year, about the last 10 months or so, been dealing with a fraudulent practice foreclosure on my house. And I have very good standing because it's been almost a year. I'm still in my house. What happened was is I had my original servicer work with a trustee and file for a foreclosure on my house with having never given me any information. As a matter of fact, I was dealing with my servicer on a restructuring. And in order to force their hand for the restructuring, you got to be at least like 3 months behind. So I went 3 months behind. After that, they said, well, you know, with the new administration having come in, you know, there's new things. We're not sure what to do. You need to deal with your mortgage insurance company. So I dealt with the mortgage insurance company. And then the original servicer from there wouldn't even deal with me. They told me, deal with your mortgage insurance company. We'll deal with them. Well, as it turns out, they kept the mortgage insurance company out of the loop, went to a trustee, filed all the paperwork for doing a foreclosure, sold my house at foreclosure, and it was purchased actually by, of all groups, Fannie Mae, for $30,000 more than I paid for the house, which was about $160,000 more than the value of the house, and they never sent me anything, which is in total violation of the provisions of the laws in the state of Nevada, as well as the Federal Fair Housing Act and a couple of other federal laws. So, long story short, I ended up filing a suit just recently, just a couple of weeks ago, in Nevada District Court, which is the state court for District of Nevada here in Pahrump. Alleging fraudulent conveyance and pointing out how fraudulent conveyance happened, which is a crime. It is fraud, and it was the conveyance of this property. On top of that, including even if this was a legal foreclosure, they didn't cut me the check, the extra check for the $30,000. So we have both the original servicer and we have the trustee that were in some sort of conspiring to do this foreclosure. And then the company that bought it, Fannie Mae, kind of a pseudo arm of the government, that bought it for an extra $30,000, and then the original servicer never sent me the extra $30,000. So the whole thing is really screwy. So I have fraudulent conveyance. That was accepted by the court. It includes an injunction against Fannie Mae trying to do anything at all with me in the house. I'm secure. Everything is good. However, here's the thing, is I really need to get a couple, I sued those three companies. I got somebody in San Diego to serve the trustee. But the original servicer is in Littleton, Colorado, and then Fannie Mae is in Washington, D.C. I need to get service done. The thing is, using a service company process server is, for some unknown reason, pretty expensive. And I'd kind of like to avoid that. So what I'm doing is I'm putting it out to you in the audience. If anybody happens to live in the Littleton, Colorado area and would be willing, I would, you know, send you out the paperwork and then a little form that you fill out, would be willing to drop this off at the original servicer for me as a process server and then send me that form back so I can then have it time-stamped with the court. Same thing if anybody's in the D.C. area that would be willing to do that for me, drop it off at Fannie Mae. I would really appreciate it and would help me out saving a few bucks, because this is a big deal, and it's really kind of drained me. So anyhow, I could really use a hand. So if anybody is able to help out, shoot me an email, bill@2aradio.com. Let me know. If you're somewhere in the Denver or Littleton area, you can help me out with one, or in the DC, Baltimore area, you can help me out with the other. That would be great. I really appreciate it. Okay, we have a caller calling in from the great state of Massachusetts, and that's David. David, welcome to 2A Radio.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Bill. I've never called your show before.
Wow, you sound like you're from Boston. Something tells me you know all about the revolution and stuff. Thanks for being a first-time caller, and tell me what's on your mind.
Well, what was on my mind, Bill? I always listen to RJ, and then I usually, you know, then it brings me up to 10 o'clock. I usually have to, you know, get out and do some things and everything, appointments and things like that. But anyways, I was just going to the bathroom and stuff, but when and the guy called in, and he was talking about, our rights and God-given and unalienable,
right,
and this and that. You know what's, that whole discussion, Bill, this is my take on the whole thing. I'm just going to give you the big picture here, and then you can comment or whatever, but, you know, these super secret societies like the Skull and Bones and the Illuminati and even the Freemasons, the highest levels of Freemasonry,
sure,
these super secret societies have produced these super Satanists, and you know, they talk about God giving us our rights and everything and so on, our God-given rights, and of course that's true. And the scripture says the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. Now, God's not going to take away his rights, because the gifts of God are without repentance, the scripture says. So we know God's not going to take our rights away. He gave them to us in the first place, and as I say, the gifts of God are without repentance, which means he's not an Indian giver. He never takes back. He's not going to take them back. Now, what the problem is, though, that these super Satanists, that these super secret societies have produced, have taken over our government.
David, you have about 10 seconds.
What I'm going to say is that, you know, Satan has always maintained that he is really the true God. So the Lord God isn't going to take our rights away, but you can just bet this great global super Satan is going to take our rights away if
David,
we don't fight.
David, thanks for the call. I'll respond after the break.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys, welcome back. To respond as best I can with David from Massachusetts with the call that we just ended the last segment with, you know, I am not a religious historian, and I understand that the guys that formed the United States through the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States were all founded on basically Judeo-Christian, mainly Christian principles. And I understand that. So with the interpretation of how God can give rights, God take away rights, here's the deal. When you have legislators and executives in the executive branch and judges in the chambers, you cannot subpoena God for his word. You have to take it by what's within the Bible. Then there's other interpretations. I can't even really discuss this. This is a show on the Second Amendment and rights to keep and bear arms. So when we start getting into the theological argument and the interpretation of the ideals of if God can give rights and take it away sort of thing and where Satan fits in, that's just not for this show. This is just... This particular... There are shows on RBN that will handle that. This particular show is not one of them. I would imagine RJ, the show before this one, would probably be interested in tackling that. So that might be an avenue for you, David, to call. And I'm sure there's several people that would like to hear some sort of response on that over RBN. I'm just not the authority on that, and I'm not going to sit here and try to pretend that I am. So we're just... I'm not qualified to take that topic on. But David, I do appreciate you calling and letting me know. Just so you guys know, this Nightingale course that's coming up, Nightingale course in California this weekend, I have had interest, out of one of the very conservative, bigger political parties in the state of Illinois. Now keep in mind, we're doing this first course in California, which is number one on the Brady list. Illinois, as I understand, is number two, very close second, on the Brady list. And Illinois is also the only state that offers no provision for anybody being able to carry a gun, either exposed or concealed. Nothing in the state of Illinois. Thank you very much to the city of Chicago and also Oak Park, that have an outright ban on handguns. Can't even have them in the city. Now, I got an email that came to me yesterday, and I spoke the other day about, I guess it's been about 10 days old news, where seven people were killed in Chicago in a period of about 8 or 9 hours. Different areas, different shootings. All right? Well, one of the listeners from the Chicago area sent me email and said, look, you had those seven that were dead. 22 others were shot. That wasn't in the story. So in about 8 or 9 hours, during the course of what that story covered, there were essentially 30 people, 29 people shot. Right? Now, that is a little over 3 an hour. That's about one person every 17 minutes, 17 or 18 minutes, is shot in the city of Chicago that night. And they don't have the ability to carry guns to protect themselves. So, getting back to the whole thing that I started with, this is I am very interested, and it's going to be based on how this course weekend goes for the guys in Illinois. I am very interested in going to Illinois and helping out doing some sort of a course there this summer, especially because we could most likely roll this into a pro McDonald versus Chicago sort of a weekend shooting rally as well, because undoubtedly, in my mind, the McDonald versus Chicago case is going to be ruled in the favor of McDonald, the pro-gun. And they're going to squash all the anti-gun stuff coming out of Chicago, which is going to be a huge, huge relief. And, of course, what's going to happen is the city council in Chicago is going to draft new legislation, like the city council in Washington, D.C. would, to attempt to show that they're doing something different, but, in fact, they're going to make it so difficult legislatively and through the regulatory process that essentially they're not going to change anything. It's going to be more and more court fights, more and more court battles, which, you know, that's, as I look at it, the Washington, D.C. City Council is in contempt of court. And it would be wonderful if the Supreme Court took it upon themselves to, in this McDonald case, say, yes, look, this ruling incorporates all of the United States and our territories, both states and federal. And on top of that, as we look at it, and the city of Washington, D.C. City Council in the last 2 years has failed to go by the provisions of Heller, we have those same provisions in this case of McDonald versus Chicago. And on top of that, we're going to make our opinion even stronger towards the Second Amendment. And we are at this point in time, because of Heller, finding the city council of Washington, D.C. in contempt of court for failing to follow the rules of this case from 2 years ago. So, that would be wonderful. Anyhow, I am really looking forward to the possibility, the idea of being able to hold a course in Illinois, hopefully just outside of Chicago. That'd rock. A two-day handgun course there with those guys. They would be the ones putting it on. I don't really want to give away all the information on it. I haven't gotten approval for that. I'm just going giving glittering generalities. But it could also be prompted up as the pro-McDonald rally, and we could have a huge course going on there. So now we have yet again another caller, and I got to tell you, I really love having callers call in. And some, it's feast or famine. I either don't get anybody for 2 weeks or I get a bunch of people in a day. Today is one of those days. We have Lee calling in from the great state of Georgia. Lee, welcome to 2A Radio.
Hello, Mr. Carnes. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you, Lee. How's it? I'm sorry. I was just going to throw out a little bit of a chit-chat there. I was going to ask how things are going in Georgia, but you got something on your mind. Go ahead.
Oh, well, things are going pretty good here. I live on a little piece of land here out in the country, so it's pretty quiet and peaceful where I live.
Very nice.
But, you know, every time I hear this conversation about gun laws and legislation and the Second Amendment, I can't help but think about Miss Clinton and her work so diligently with the United Nations and this small arms treaty. And every time I think about that, I can't help but remember the words of one of the greatest men in our history, Thomas Jefferson, when he said, "No man shall ever be debarred the use of arms. The strongest reason for the people to retain their right to keep and bear arms is as a last resort to tyranny and government."
You're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, that's one of the slogans I almost put on my business card. I chose one of George Washington, which has essentially equal footing on it. But, yeah, absolutely.
Right. And I keep trying to get people to understand, you know, they get on their soapbox and talk about the right to free speech and all of this, and they keep forgetting that without the Second Amendment, you don't have any other rights.
Well, no, the Second Amendment keeps the other rights in place. And if we
exactly.
lose the Second Amendment, that'll just be the first one to fall. The rest will come after that. Lee, thank you very much. So, very insightful, and I absolutely agree with you. I've been singing the same tune. All right, guys. I want to talk, actually, for a moment about this whole treaty-related thing. There is a treaty that's trying to be negotiated in the UN, which would provide all the UN members that sign on to it some sort of gun ban or regulation, which would allow UN people to really oversee everything dealing with firearms in this country, blah, 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 blah. I have to tell you, I am not concerned about this. I'm really not. First of all, it's many years out if it happens. On top of that, and not to say that you shouldn't plan for the future. I mean, don't get me wrong. Allow me a moment to explain. The Senate would have to ratify this treaty, which I don't know that they would. Even if they did, the thing is this. There is absolutely nothing that any treaty can ever do to subvert your rights. It cannot happen. The only thing a treaty can do is deal with any sort of commerce. It cannot. Treaties enacted in this country by Constitution cannot have anything to do directly with the people of this country or their rights, which are inalienable within. I need you to understand that. A lot of people will lead you to believe otherwise. A lot of groups would lead you to believe otherwise. There's never been a treaty ever signed by this country, ratified by the Senate, and enacted in this country that has ever had a direct effect on any one individual's rights. It might have something to do with some sort of commerce coming in, possibly dealing with imports of guns or even exports of guns going out to other countries. But when it comes to our individual rights to actually keep and bear arms, then we do not have any sort of a... We cannot... No treaty can subvert our rights. Now, it might have to be a court fight, but no treaty can actually take away an individual's rights. I just want to explain that. So, We are, as a matter of fact, Carrie, I am Mr. Popular today. We have calling in from Wisconsin, we have Gregory. Gregory, welcome to 2A Radio.
Hello?
How are you, my man?
I'm all right, sir. Say, I was just listening to you talk about needing a process server.
I do.
I took a course from a lawyer out of Florida who it's called Jurisdictionary.
I have that.
Oh, do you?
I do.
Oh, well, on that one part, he shows you how to do that, and all that you need to do is attach to your mailing service of process. It's kind of like an affidavit, you know, I swear that on this day I put this in the mail.
You're right, and I know you can do that, but the way it was explained to me from the judge's actual real-life assistant was that is a last resort that they want to accept at the state level. They will accept it only if you try to get it directly served by someone in a service. They want somebody to hand serve it, and their rule at that particular court that this particular judge has said, and I don't know if it's a state law or state ruling, but this judge has said, I want everyone to be served personally. If that's not possible, then you can revert to the mail and doing the certification. So I'm just trying to make the judge happy. By no means do I want to do something other than what the judge says, because I'm the plaintiff. And the last thing I want to do, especially being pro se, is to potentially tick the judge off with something as simple as that. But, Gregory, I appreciate the call. I appreciate the insight. And I have to tell you that actually that it's one of the other listeners that turned me on to that Jurisdictionary. And
okay.
So I've had great callers.
Can I ask you another question?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, a couple of days ago, or I think it was last week, you were talking about calibers of a gun. And for a long time, I have been a fan of the 9mm, but you made a statement about that it's not very reliable in action.
If you like, I'll let you carry on, but I'll even tell you why that came about. But carry on.
Well, I just like that caliber because I have noticed when I'm pulling the trigger that there's not a whole lot of kick. You know, but that's a 115-grain bullet. And, like 100 feet, it leaves a nice hole in that target. And I was just wondering why you were kind of discounting that caliber.
All right. Well, I tell you what, I will give you the answer. Go ahead and hang up so I don't have all the rest of the static going on. And I'll be happy to give you the answer. So stay tuned in. I guess I should start with this. The main thing that started this whole caliber selection thing was back in April of 1986, the FBI shooting in Miami versus Platin Maddox. These guys collectively soaked up 18 rounds, and the gunfight lasted for a little over 4 minutes. I think there was 9 FBI agents there. Only one escaped injury. And there's some insight on that. Basically kind of a cowering sort of a deal from what the information I got. The FBI wasn't willing to release all the information. Anyhow, they realized that caliber selection and bullet selection really, I mean, things should have gone better. These guys were hit with 4 different things. .357 Magnum, .38 Special, 9mm, and double-odd buck. One of the rounds went into Platt. It went in through his arm, shattered the bone, severed the brachial artery, entered into the thoracic cavity, punctured a lung, and stopped just short of the aorta. And that was a 9mm, 115-grain Winchester silver-tip hollow point. For anybody that knows anything about 9mm, that is a devastating wound from a 9mm. They're light in weight. They don't carry that far, and when it's supposed to mushroom out, which is a hollow point's design, this actually got quite a bit of penetration. Didn't mushroom quite as far as it, I guess it should have, but that's about as good a hit as you can get. That was the deadly hit on Platt. He was not going to survive that wound. If he took that shot in a trauma center with a team of surgeons standing by, they wouldn't have been able to stop him. But the thing is, it wasn't an instant kill. He was bleeding out. Both through the thorax and through the brachial artery. All right. Now, keep in mind, the whole thing with it doesn't kick much. It's called recoil. Recoil is handled by proper grip and stance. If you have proper grip and stance and you're 5'2" and 115 pounds, you can handle a 44 Magnum with the proper grip and the proper stance. So really, how much kick the gun offers is, if you don't have the proper technique, then that'll affect you. The thing is, you have to learn the proper technique. You really, really honest to God do. Out of the Platinmatic shooting, what they did was the FBI decided, look, we want to find out the best round. What they found was the 10mm, which had been around for a while, but downloaded a little bit, so it didn't have quite as much recoil to it, ended up being a fantastic stopping round. So then what Winchester did was they just cut the casing down to where it was no longer such a long casing. The 10mm casing is the same length as a 45. The 40 Smith & Wesson is the same length as a 9mm, so now you can put essentially the same round as a downloaded 10mm, which has to fit in a gun the size that would shoot a 45 ACP. They just cut the casing down, put the bullet in there. Now that round would fit into a gun the size of a 9mm. So you end up with a 40 Smith & Wesson. Or you can go up to a 45, which is great. A 45 with 230 grain ball ammo works wonderfully. All right. So I hear the music. We're coming up on break. So I'll get back into kind of this caliber selection after the break. Stay tuned.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on!
And we're back. I'm going to carry on this topic about handgun caliber selection. Here's the deal. All of these popular handgun calibers have been used in enough shootings that there's enough data out there. We're going to talk about legitimate shootings into, say, the thoracic area. That's, you know, the thorax is essentially everything inside the rib cage. All right. That's what we're talking about. There's been many, many, I mean, literally hundreds of shootings now with 22s, 25s, 38, 9mm, 357. 44, 45, 40, 10 mil, all of this stuff. So what you want to do is you want to be able to find a gun that is not too big, not too small, that holds a good caliber that will be able to stop somebody. And by stop that, I don't mean kill, I mean stop. You want them to stop whatever it is they're doing, which causes you to fear for imminent fear of death or serious bodily injury to yourself or a loved one, somebody around you, from this perpetrator that forced you into shooting them. You want them to stop. If they die, they die. I mean, it is lethal force, but that doesn't mean they're going to die. As a matter of fact, the last statistic that I came across was 86% of all urban shootings are survivable and are survived. 86%. Only 14 out of 100 that get shot within an urban area actually die. Now, a lot of that has to do with shot placement being sorry. Just not good shot placement. Anyhow, I digress. The 9mm's never been a very fantastic performer. It just has not, historically. Now, a lot of people will say, you know, more people die from shots by 22s than anything else. That's only because the vast majority of people who are shot with a 22. So, of course, the numbers are going to jump up. But what we're talking about is percentages. Take the percentage of the people who are shot with 22s, the percentage shot by 9s, percentage shot by 40s, percentage shot by 10s, percentage shot by 45s, so on. That are stopped, not killed, but that's a whole different realm, but are stopped with those rounds. The 9mm is not a very good performer. Nearly every major police department in the entire country, I shouldn't even say major, the most popular handgun caliber by police departments in the entire country is the 40 Smith & Wesson. 20 years ago, the 40 didn't even exist. It came out of existence because of the Miami shootout in April of 86, and it came out in about 90 or 91. So I think it was just brand new introduced just now 20 years ago. And by far, it is the most popular police caliber because it is controllable. It's way better than the 9. It's not as big and bad as the 10, and it fits in a smaller gun. It just is a fantastic caliber. And then those that carry a 45, especially in the format of a 1911, have the finest trigger, a little bit bigger gun, but narrow grip. It's great, and that caliber is a proven man-stopper. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you, in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Stay tuned for the Control Factor coming up next.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.